Here's a chart. There's a lot of high numbers in it. We'll come back to it, but that's the main point. We've heard about this a little bit. There are two tiers of taxes that apply for violations on all of these things. The first tier tax applies based on the violation itself, and then the second tier tax is an extra layer of penalty that happens if you haven't actually corrected the situation when the IRS tells you to. Note again that these taxes apply to, or these taxes are assessed against different parties. So sometimes it's the foundation itself. Sometimes in the case of self-dealing, it's the disqualified person. Sometimes it'll be your foundation manager who could be, you know, somebody on your staff.
And Jana, can I just add it? Also, it includes like your board, you and your trustees. And, you know, I think it'd be interesting, too, to just real quickly, how many of you in the room are actually on staff at a private foundation? Okay. And then how many of you are providing either legal or accounting or financial services to a private foundation? Okay. So we have more staff. And I think, you know, that's the important thing. And one of the things, I'm the sidekick here. I'm trying to put some of the legal requirements into a context from the foundation side point. And I think sometimes it's, you know, we always think that it's somebody else that's going to get in trouble, and we forget that we're part of that decision-making process and we are held accountable. And oftentimes we forget that our board members are decision makers within our foundation, and they can make some decisions or they can take actions on some things that we're unaware of that can lead us into trouble. And so we're going to try to prevent that from happening.
Ideally. Thanks for that. So hopefully the chart is scary enough to get you to pay attention, even though it's the afternoon and everybody's sleepy. It's scary enough for me to pay attention. I wouldn't say I lose sleep over it because I'm a really good sleeper. I know. Let's talk a little bit about self-dealing. We won't go too much into detail because the last panel talked a lot about self-dealing. But generally, again, we're talking about transaction, and we're talking about that transaction being with a disqualified person. And those disqualified persons are generally who you would think of as insiders. Your board, your donors, people who control the money or who control the actions of the organization. And the two points I want to highlight for you, again, on self-dealing, because they cannot possibly be emphasized enough, is that generally it doesn't matter if the transaction is actually to the benefit of the private foundation. That is not what the test is. So you may have a bunch of board members who think they are doing the right thing by recommending that a transaction take place because it is a bargain sale or it's something else that seems like it's in the clear interest of the foundation, and that may still come up against the self-dealing rules. And if you're the only person in your organization who knows what the rules are, it's going to be on you to remind those decision makers that, yes, there are self-dealing rules, and yes, the penalties could also apply to them, so they should listen to you when you raise red flags. The other point that I want to make, which I don't think has been raised before, is that knowledge is not actually part of this test. So you could have a disqualified person who is, say, a donor who's still alive, but not really involved in the day-to-day of the foundation's activities. And if that donor is somehow involved in a self-dealing transaction because they're a disqualified person as a substantial contributor, that person could still be subject to penalties, and that would still be potentially self-dealing. And the foundation manager could still be subject to penalties, even though that disqualified person was not the genesis of that transaction and maybe didn't even know about that transaction.
So, Jana, I want to throw something out at you. So, you have a big event happening in your community, and tickets to this event are in high demand, and it's a controlled number of tickets. And all of a sudden, board members from your foundation and staff receive complimentary tickets in the mail, and the foundation has provided funding to this organization for multiple years, who's hosting this event. And so you're unaware that your trustees have received these tickets and everybody attends except for staff. What say you there?
Uh-oh. This sounds like a maybe not that hypothetical.
It could be.
Yeah. So we've got a bunch of board members.
Mm-hmm.
They're disqualified persons.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a grantee.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a grantee who seems to be offering tickets to people who have been in a position to give money to them.
That thought never crossed their mind. They just were excited about the
event
and wanted more people to be there.
Well, do you have a paper trail of that? So there's some messiness in this.
Yes.
There's some messiness in this. How many board members are we talking about?
Eight.
Eight. That's a lot of board members.
It is. Out of ten.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Two of them were out of town.
Wow.
Oh. And I apologize, Janice. She did not know that was coming. But, you know, so often it's those innocent things like that that catch you in a very compromising position, and it goes back to the importance of keeping your board aware, having a very strong board orientation, and it's not a one and done. It is constant reminders of all of these things that seem to happen in good faith and for the best of intentions, but we have to look at it a little bit differently and be more discriminating and hopefully prepare our board where they would look at those tickets and go, thank you, but no.